The architect took a deep breath. And of course you'll require all the usual steels, avenues, ceremonial sphinxes, he began. Lots, said Tepic. We leave it entirely up to you. Pataclusp mopped his brow. Fine, he said. Marvellous. He blew his nose. Your father, if I may make so bold, O sower of the seed, is extremely fortunate in having such a dutiful son. I may add, you may go, said Dios, and we will expect work to start imminently. Without delay, I assure you, said Pataclusp. He seems to be wrestling with some huge philosophical problem. Yes, said Dios coldly. There's the matter of... which is not to say... of course, oldest client, valued customer, but the fact is that... absolutely no doubt about credit's worthiness. Would not wish to suggest in any way whatsoever that... Dios gave him a stare that would have caused a sphinx to blink and look away. You wish to say something, he said. His Majesty's time is extremely limited. Pataclusp worked his jaw silently, but the result was a foregone conclusion. Even gods had been reduced to sheepish mumbling in the face of Dios's face, and the carved snakes on his staff seemed to be watching him too. No, sorry, I was just thinking aloud. I'll depart, then, shall I? Such a lot of work to be done. He bowed low. He was halfway to the archway before Dios added, Completion in 3 months, in time for inundation. Like many river valley cultures, the kingdom has no truck with such trivia as summer, springtime, and winter, and bases its calendar squarely on the great heartbeat of the Dajel. Hence the three seasons, seed time, inundation, and sog. This is logical, straightforward, and practical, and only disapproved of by barbershop quartets. Because you feel an idiot singing in the good old inundation, that's why. What? You are talking to the 1,398th monarch, said Dios icily. Pataclusp swallowed. I'm sorry, he whispered. I mean, what, O great king? I mean, block haulage alone will take... The architect's lips trembled as he tried out various comments, and in his imagination ran them full tilt into Dios's stare. "'The sort wasn't built in a day,' he mumbled. "'We do not believe we laid the specifications for that job,' said Dios. He gave Pataclusp a smile. In some ways it was worse than everything else. "'We will, of course,' he said, "'pay extra.' "'But you never per... Pataclusp began, and then sagged. "'The penalties for not completing on time will, of course, be terrible,' said Dios. "'The usual clause.' Pataclusp hadn't the nerve left to argue. "'Of course,' he said, utterly defeated. "'It is an honour. Will your eminences excuse me? "'There are still some hours of daylight left.' Tepic nodded. "'Thank you,' said the architect. "'May your loins be truly fruitful, saving your presence, Lord Dios.' They heard him running down the steps outside. "'It will be magnificent. Too big, but magnificent,' said Dios. He looked out between the pillars at the necropolic panorama on the far bank of the Djell. "'Magnificent,' he repeated. He winced once more at the stab of pain in his leg. "'Ah, he'd have to cross the river again tonight, no doubt of it.' He'd been foolish putting it off for days, but it would be unthinkable not to be in a position to serve the kingdom properly. "'Something wrong, Dios?' said Tepic. "'Sire, you looked a bit pale, I thought.' A look of panic flickered over Dios's wrinkled features. He pulled himself upright. "'I assure you, sire, I am in the best of health. The best of health, sire.' "'You don't think you've been overdoing it, do you?' This time there was no mistaking the expression of terror. "'Overdoing what, sire?' "'You're always bustling, Dios. First one up, last one to bed. You should take it easy.' I exist only to serve, sire, said Dios firmly. I exist only to serve. Tepic joined him on the balcony. The early evening sun glowed on a man-made mountain range. This was only the central massif. The pyramids stretched from the delta all the way up to the second cataract, where the Djel disappeared into the mountains, and the pyramids occupied the best land near the river. Even the farmers would have considered it sacrilegious to suggest anything different. Some of the pyramids were small, and made of rough-hewn blocks that contrived to look far older than the mountains that fenced the valley from the high desert. After all, mountains had always been there. Words like young and old didn't apply to them. But those first pyramids had been built by human beings, little bags of thinking water held up briefly by fragile accumulations of calcium, who had cut rocks into pieces and then painfully put them back together again in a better shape. They were old. Over the millennia, the fashions had fluctuated. Later, pyramids were smooth and sharp, or flattened and tiled with mica. Even the steepest of them, Tepic mused, wouldn't rate more than 1-0 on any edificier's scale, although some of the stelae and temples which flocked around the base of the pyramids like tugboats around the dreadnoughts of eternity could be worthy of attention. Dreadnoughts of eternity, he thought, sailing ponderously through the mists of time with every passenger travelling first class. A few stars had been let out early. Tepic looked up at them. Perhaps, he thought, there is life somewhere else. On the stars, maybe. If it's true that there are billions of universes stacked alongside one another, the thickness of a thought apart, then there must be people elsewhere. But wherever they are, no matter how mightily they try, no matter how magnificent the effort, they surely can't manage to be as god-awfully stupid as us. I mean, we work at it. We were given a spark of it to start with, but over hundreds of thousands of years we've really improved on it. He turned to Dios, feeling that he ought to repair a little bit of the damage. You can feel the age radiating off them, can't you? He said conversationally. Pardon, sire? The pyramids, Dios, they're so old. Dios glanced vaguely across the river. Are they? He said. Yes, I suppose they are. Will you get one? Said Tepic. A pyramid? Said Dios. Sire, I have one already. It pleased one of your forebears to make provision for me. That must have been a great honor, said Tepic. Dios nodded graciously. The staterooms of Fereber were usually reserved for royalty. It is, of course, very small, very plain, but it will suffice for my simple needs. Will it? Said Tepic, yawning. That's nice. And now, if you don't mind, I think I'll turn in. It's been a long day. Dios bowed as though he was hinged in the middle. Tepic had noticed that Dios had at least 50 finely tuned ways of bowing, each one conveying subtle shades of meaning. This one looked like a number 3. I am your humble servant. And a very good day it was, too, if I may say so, sire. Tepic was lost for words. You thought so? He said. The cloud effects at dawn were particularly effective. They were? Oh. Do I have to do anything about the sunset? Your Majesty is pleased to joke, said Dios. Sunsets happen by themselves, sire. echoed Tepic. Dios cracked his knuckles. The trick is in the sunrise, he said. The crumbling scrolls of Connaught said that the great orange sun was eaten every evening by the sky goddess Huat, who saved one pip in time to grow a fresh sun for the next morning. And Dios knew that this was so. The Book of Staying in the Pit said that the sun was the eye of Ye, toiling across the sky each day in his endless search for his toenails. Literally, Dahar Ret Kar Mon, or clipping of the foot. But some scholars say that it should be Dar Rahet Kare Mhun, literally, hot air paint stripper. And Dios knew that this was so. The secret rituals of the smoking mirror held that the sun was in fact a round hole in the spinning blue soap bubble of the goddess Nesh, opening into the fiery, real world beyond, and the stars were the holes that the rain comes through. And Dios knew that this also was so. Folk myth said the sun was a ball of fire which circled the world every day, and that the world itself was carried through the everlasting void on the back of an enormous turtle. And Dios also knew that this was so, although it gave him a bit of trouble. And Dios knew that Net was the supreme god, and that Fon was the supreme god, and so were Hast, Set, Bin, Sot, Io, Dehek, and Ptui. That Herpetine Triskeles alone ruled the world of the dead, and so did Sinkope and Silur, the catfish-headed god, and Orexis Nupt. Dios was maximum high priest to a national religion that had fermented and accreted and bubbled for more than 7,000 years, and never threw a god away in case it turned out to be useful. He knew that a great many mutually contradictory things were all true. If they were not, then ritual and belief were as nothing, and if they were nothing, then the worlds did not exist. As a result of this sort of thinking, the priests of the Dajjal could give mind room to a collection of ideas that would make even a quantum mechanic give in and hand back his toolbox. Dios's staff knocked echoes from the stones as he limped alone into the darkness down little frequented passages until he emerged on a small jetty. Untying the boat there, the high priest climbed in with difficulty, unshipped the oars, and pushed himself out into the turbid waters of the dark Dajjal. His hands and feet felt too cold. Foolish. Foolish. He should have done this before. The boat jerked slowly into midstream as full night rolled over the valley. On the far bank, in response to the ancient laws, the pyramids started to light the sky. Lights also burned late in the house of Pataclusp Associates, necropolitan builders to the dynasties. The father and his twin sons were hunched over the huge wax designing tray, arguing.
"It's not as if they ever pay," said Pataclusp II A. "I mean, it's not just a case of not being able to, they don't seem to have grasped the idea. At least dynasties like Tassort pay up within 100 years or so. Why didn't you—"
"We've built pyramids along the Dajjal for the last 3,000 years, said his father stiffly, "and we haven't lost by it, have we? No, we haven't, because the other kingdoms look to the Dajjal, and they say there's a family that really knows its pyramids. Connoisseurs, they say. We'll have what they're having, if you please, with knobs on. Anyway, they're real royalty," he added. "Not like some of the ones you get these days. Here today, gone next millennium. They're half-gods, too. You don't expect real royalty to pay its way. That's one of the signs of real royalty. Not having any money."
"You don't get more royal than them, then. You'd need a new word," said 2A. "We're nearly royal in that case."
"You don't understand business, my son. You think it's all bookkeeping. Well, it isn't."
It's a question of mass and the power-to-weight ratio."
They both glared at Pataclusp II B, who was sitting staring at the sketches. He was turning his stylus over and over in his hands, which were trembling with barely suppressed excitement.
We'll have to use granite for the lower slopes," he said, talking to himself. "The limestone wouldn't take it, not with all the power flows, which will be, whew, they'll be big. I mean, we're not talking razor blades here. This thing could put an edge on a rolling pin."
Pataclusp rolled his eyes. He was only one generation into a dynasty, and already it was trouble. One son a born accountant, the other in love with this newfangled cosmic engineering. There hadn't been any such thing when he was a lad. There was just architecture. You drew the plans and then got in 10,000 lads on time and a half and double bubble at weekends. They just had to pile the stuff up. You didn't have to be cosmic about it. Descendants. The gods had seen fit to give him one son who charged you for the amount of breath expended in saying good morning, and another one who worshipped geometry and stayed up all night designing aqueducts. You scrimped and saved to send them to the best schools, and then they went and paid you back by getting educated.
"What are you talking about?" he snapped.
The discharge alone," 2B pulled his abacus towards him and rattled the pottery beads along the wires. "Let's say we're talking twice the height of the executive model, which gives us a mass of, plus additional coded dimensions of occult significance as per spec. We couldn't do this sort of thing even 100 years ago, you realize. Not with the primitive techniques we had then."
His finger became a blur. 2A gave a snort and grabbed his own abacus.
"Limestone at 2 talents the ton,"
he said. "Wear and tear on tools, masonry charges, demurrage, breakages. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. On cost, black marble at replacement prices."
Pataclusp sighed. Two abacai rattling in tandem the whole day long, one changing the shape of the world and the other one deploring the cost. Whatever happened to the two bits of wood and a plumb line? The last beads clicked against the stops.
"It'll be a whole quantum leap in pyramidology," said 2B, sitting back with a messianic grin on his face.
"It'll be a whole qua..."
2A began.
"Quantum," said 2B, savouring the word.
"It'll be a whole quantum leap in bankruptcy," said 2A. "They'd have to invent a new word for that, too."
"It'd be worth it as a loss leader," said 2B.
"Sure enough, when it comes to making a loss, we'll be in the lead," said 2A sourly.
It'd practically glow. In millennia to come, people will look at it and say, "That Pataclusp, he knew his pyramids all right."
"They'll call it Pataclusp's folly, you mean?"
By now, the brothers were both standing up, their noses a few inches apart.
"The trouble with you, sibling, is that you know the cost of everything and the value of nothing."
"The trouble with you is that you don't. Mankind must strive ever upwards." "Yes, on a sound financial footing, by cuffed."
"The search for knowledge."
"The search for probity."
Pataclusp left them to it and stood staring out at the yard, where, under the glow of torches, the staff were doing a feverish stock-taking. It had been a small business when Father passed it on to him. Just a yard full of blocks and various sphinxes, needles, steels and other stock items, and a thick stack of unpaid bills, most of them addressed to the palace, and respectfully pointing out that our esteemed account, presented 900 years ago, appeared to have been overlooked and prompt settlement would oblige. But it had been fun in those days. There was just him, 5,000 labourers, and Mrs. Pataclusp doing the books. "You had to do pyramids," Dad said. "All the profit was in mastabas, small family tombs, memorial needles, and general jobbing necropoly. But if you didn't do pyramids, you didn't do anything. The meanest garlic farmer, looking for something neat and long-lasting, with maybe some green marble chippings but within a budget, wouldn't go to a man without a pyramid to his name. So he'd done pyramids, and they'd been good ones. Not like some you saw these days with the wrong number of sides and walls you could put your foot through. And yes, somehow they'd gone from strength to strength. To build the biggest pyramid ever. In 3 months. With terrible penalties if it wasn't done on time. Dios hadn't specified how terrible, but Pataclusp knew his man, and they probably involved crocodiles. They'd be pretty terrible, all right. He stared at the flickering light on the long avenues of statues, including the one of Bloody Hat, the vulture-headed god of unexpected guests, bought on the off-chance years ago and turned down by the client owing to not being up to snuff in the beak department and unshiftable ever since, even at a discount. The biggest pyramid ever. And after you'd knocked your pipes out, seeing to it that the nobility had their tickets to eternity, were you allowed to turn your expertise homeward, i.e. a bijou pyramidette for self and Mrs. Pataclusp, to ensure safe delivery into the netherworld? Of course not. Even Dad had only been allowed to have a mastaba, even though it was one of the best on the river, he had to admit. That red-veined marble had been ordered all the way from Hawonderland. A lot of people had asked for the same. It had been good for business. But that's how Dad would have liked it. The biggest pyramid ever. And they'd never remember who was under it. It didn't matter if they called it Pataclusp's folly or Pataclusp's glory. They'd call it Pataclusp's. He surfaced from this pool of thought to hear his son still arguing. If this was his posterity, he'd take his chances with 600-ton limestone blocks. At least they were quiet.
"Shut up, the pair of you," he said.
They stopped and sat down, grumbling.
"I've made up my mind," he said.
2B doodled fitfully with his stylus. 2A strummed his abacus.
"We're going to do it," said Pataclusp, and strode out of the room, "and any son who doesn't like it will be cast into the outer darkness, where there is a wailing and a crashing of teeth."
he called over his shoulder. The two brothers, left to themselves, glowered at each other. At last, 2A said, "What does quantum mean, anyway?" 2B shrugged. "It means add another naught," he said.
"Oh," said 2A, "is that all?"
All along the river valley of the Dajel, the pyramids were flaring silently into the night, discharging the accumulated power of the day. Great, soundless flames erupted from their capstones and danced upwards, jagged as lightning, cold as ice. For hundreds of miles the desert glittered with the constellations of the dead, the aurora of antiquity. But along the valley of the Dajel, the lights ran together in one solid ribbon of fire. It was on the floor, and it had a pillow at one end. It had to be a bed. Tepic found he was doubting it as he tossed and turned, trying to find some part of the mattress that was prepared to meet him halfway. "This is stupid," he thought. "I grew up on beds like this, and pillows carved out of rock. I was born in this palace. This is my heritage. I must be prepared to accept it. I must order a proper bed and a feather pillow from Ankh first thing in the morning. I, the king, have said this shall be done." He turned over, his head hitting the pillow with a thud. And plumbing. What a great idea that was. It was amazing what you could do with a hole in the ground. Yes, plumbing. And bloody doors. Tepic definitely wasn't used to having several attendants waiting on his will all the time, so performing his ablutions before bed had been extremely embarrassing. And the people, too. He was definitely going to get to know the people. It was wrong, all this skulking around in palaces. And how was a fellow supposed to sleep with the sky over the river glowing like a firework? Eventually, sheer exhaustion wrestled his body into some zone between sleeping and waking, and mad images stalked across his eyeballs. There was the shame of his ancestors when future archaeologists translated the as yet unpainted frescoes of his reign. Squiggle, constipated eagle, wiggly line, hippo's bottom, squiggle. And in the year of the cycle of Sefnet, the sun god Tepic had plumbing installed and scorned the pillows of his forebears. He dreamed of Kuft, huge bearded, speaking in thunder and lightning, calling down the wrath of the heavens on this descendant who was betraying the noble past. Dios floated past his vision, explaining that as a result of an edict passed several thousand years ago, it was essential that he marry a cat. Various headed gods vied for his attention, explaining details of godhood, while in the background a distant voice tried to attract his attention and screamed something about not wanting to be buried under a load of stone. But he had no time to concentrate on this, because he saw seven fat cows and seven thin cows, one of them playing a trombone. But that was an old dream. He dreamt that one nearly every night. And then there was a man firing arrows at a tortoise. And then he was walking over the desert and found a tiny pyramid only a few inches high. A wind sprang up and blew away the sand, only now it wasn't a wind. It was the pyramid rising, sand tumbling down its gleaming sides. And it grew bigger and bigger, bigger than the world, so that at last the pyramid was so big that the whole world was a speck in the centre. And in the centre of the pyramid something very strange happened. And the pyramid grew smaller, taking the world with it, and vanished. Of course, when you're a pharaoh, you get a very high class of obscure dream. Another day dawned, courtesy of the king, who was curled up on the bed and using his rolled-up clothes as a pillow. Around the stone maze of the palace, the servants of the kingdom began to wake up. Dios's boat slid gently through the water and bumped into the jetty. Dios climbed out and hurried into the palace, bounding up the steps, three at a time, and rubbing his hands together at the thought of a fresh day laid out before him, every hour and ritual ticking neatly into place. So much to organize, so much to be needed for. The chief sculptor and maker of mummy cases folded up his measure.
You've done a good job there, Master Dill, he said.
Dill nodded. There was no false modesty between craftsmen. The sculptor gave him a nudge.
What a team, eh? He said. You pickle them, I create them.
Dill nodded, but rather more slowly. The sculptor looked down at the wax oval in his hands.
"Can't say I think much of the death mask, mind," he said.
Gurn, who was working hard on the corner slab on one of the Queen's late cats, which he had been allowed to do all by himself, looked up in horror.
"I done it very careful," he said sulkily.
"That's the whole point," said the sculptor.
"I know," said Dill sadly. It's the nose, isn't it?
Yeah, it was more the chin.
And the chin?
Yes.
Yes.
They looked in gloomy silence at the waxen visage of the Pharaoh. So did the Pharaoh.
Nothing wrong with my chin?
You could put a beard on it, said Dill eventually.
It'd cover a lot, that would. A beard.
Yeah, there's still the nose.
You could take half an inch off that and do something with the cheekbones.
Yeah, yeah.
Gurn was horrified.
That's the face of our late king you're talking about, he said. You can't do that sort of thing. Anyway, people would notice,
he hesitated. Wouldn't they? The two craftsmen eyed one another.
Gurn, said Dill patiently, certainly they'll notice, but they won't say anything. They expect us to, improve matters. After all, said the chief sculptor cheerfully, you don't think they're going to step up and say, it's all wrong, he really had a face like a short-sighted chicken, do you?
Thank you very much. Thank you very much indeed, I must say.
The Pharaoh went and sat by the cat. It seemed that people only had respect for the dead when they thought the dead were listening.
I suppose, said the apprentice with some uncertainty, he did look a bit ugly compared to the frescoes.
That's the point, isn't it? Said Dill meaningfully.
Gurn's big, honest, spotty face changed slowly like a cratered landscape with clouds passing across it. It was dawning on him that this came under the heading of initiation into ancient craft secrets.
You mean, even the painters changed it?
He began. Dill frowned at him.
We don't talk about it, he said.
Gurn tried to force his features into an expression of worthy seriousness.
Oh, he said. Yes, I see, master.
The sculptor clapped him on the back.
You're a bright lad, Gurn, he said. You catch on. After all, it's bad enough being ugly when you're alive. Think how terrible it'd be to be ugly in the netherworld.
King Tepikaimon the 27th shook his head. We all have to look alike when we're alive, he thought. And now they make sure we're identical when we're dead. What a kingdom. He looked down and saw the soul of the late cat, which was washing itself. When he was alive, he'd hated the things, but just now it seemed positively companionable. He patted it gingerly on its flat head. It purred for a moment and then attempted to strip the flesh from his hand. It was on a definite hiding to nothing there. He was aware with growing horror that the trio was now discussing a pyramid. His pyramid. It was going to be the biggest one ever. It was going to go on a highly fertile piece of sloping ground on a prime site in the necropolis. It was going to make even the biggest existing pyramid look like something a child might construct in a sand tray. It was going to be surrounded by marble gardens and granite obelisks. It was going to be the greatest memorial ever built by a son for his father. The king groaned.